Good afternoon. It's Thursday, July 31st. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. It's 3 o'clock, the top of the hour. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk to Jason Tarver about the new Juno Mercantile and Armory. We'll talk with Shken George about her first Friday exhibit at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. We'll also talk with Lori from Daughters of the New Moon. And we'll talk with Sandy Fortier about all the things going on in the arts world, which is always so much in this fine town. Writer's Almanac and more here on Juno Afternoon. But first, National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribes are seeking U.S. government allies to reduce harm in the wake of natural disasters. The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs examined the issue this week. With more is Matt Laszlo in Washington, D.C.
Alongside tribal representatives, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, also known as FEMA, is convening with senators to coordinate the best practices to deal with the aftermath of floods and tornadoes. North Dakota Democratic Senator Heidi Heitkamp is pressing FEMA and its Response and Recovery Administrator, Elizabeth Zimmerman, on the few disaster recourses available. Heitkamp thinks government-backed loans from the Small Business Administration should be there for worst-case scenarios.
And just to maybe prove my point, how many SBA loans do you think have been done on Indian Country in response to a declaration or a disaster relief?
I have no idea.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
Michael Chavarria is governor of the Pueblo of Santa Clara in New Mexico. He says Congress may have to establish an emergency response fund. If not, reorganize the Bureau of Indian Affairs entirely to help Native Americans pick up the pieces after a disaster hits.
The idea behind this fund will be for the BIA to have a hand of significant funding that can be deployed over multi-years to address short- and long-term disaster recovery and disaster mitigation needs. This proposal could be taken even further by the creation of an Emergency Management Department or division within the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
It's said an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. But as the Earth is increasingly reshaped by global warming, some leaders say investing in cures for disasters is more important than ever. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
A research institute says schools and professional teams should retire sports mascots that adversely affect the well-being of Native Americans. As WCPN's Brian Bull reports from Cleveland, Ohio, a newspaper contributor agrees with the findings and points to actions by fans at Cleveland Indians baseball games.
The Center for American Progress's report says Native-themed team names and displays during pep rallies or spirit weeks can cause confusion, embarrassment, or alienation among Native students. Eric Stegman is co-author of the report.
School is a tough enough place to be as it is. And when you have to see your culture boiled down to what some non-Native person decides they want it to be, that sticks with you the rest of your life. And then when you have to grow up in a place like Cleveland and deal with things like the Cleveland Indians, it really makes Native people feel like non-Native people, A, don't understand them, and B, don't really care of what their issues are.
Stegman says this isolated feeling can contribute to poor grades, conflicts with classmates and teachers, and substance abuse. Cynthia Connolly is a member of the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians and guest columnist for The Plain Dealer. She agrees with the center's report and says it's hard to work and live near Progressive Field during baseball season.
It's really hard to see these young kids wearing face paint and headdresses and knowing full well that they just don't fully understand why they're doing it. But then they're going to grow up with that tradition and they're going to think it's okay. And so that's where this cycle needs to stop.
The Center for American Progress recommends that the U.S. Education Department's Office of Civil Rights use its full power to eliminate what it calls hostile environments in schools. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
Utah Governor Gary Herber issued an executive order this week to strengthen communication between state agencies and tribes. The action took place at an annual tribal summit. According to the governor's office, the executive order is the first of its kind in the state. It directs each state agency to develop a formal tribal consultation policy. The agencies will also be required to produce an annual report. The two-day summit was attended by representatives of Utah's eight tribes. Unemployment, health, and education were among the issues addressed. There was also youth development for high school and college students. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com.
Not voting is not rebelling, it's surrendering. Your voice counts when you vote. First, you have to register. Find out more at NativeVote.org, brought to you by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser, and our first guest in the studio today is Jason Tarver, one of the owners of Juno Mercantile and Armory, a brand new place. Welcome to the studio.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it being here.
Yeah, so Juno Mercantile and Armory actually pretty much is what it sounds like.
It is, yeah. It's an indoor shooting facility, and we also have retail and classes about involving the gun industry.
Okay, so this is a brand new place. I mean, you're talking, you've been open...
Just a couple of weeks, yeah. We went ahead and opened on the 4th of July. We thought that was an appropriate day to open the doors, and we've had a great response from the locals, and yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about all the different facets of what's going on out there?
Yeah, so we have a five-lane shooting. We can handle up to 50 BMG. Folks are allowed to bring their own firearms in. They could bring their own ammunition in. We can't have any incendiary rounds or armor-piercing rounds. We've also got firearms to rent, and then we also do a fully automatic machine gun tour package, and that involves a one-on-one. One of our certified range safety officers takes you down, explains the firearm, the technique, some history of the firearm, and then shows you how to fire the firearm properly. And then we also have classes, everything from basic pistol classes, range certified officer classes, refuse to be a victim classes that will be starting this fall. And we have our archery outfitters that are in one of the mezzanines above us. And then our future is we're going to open the other half of the basement into archery lanes also.
Wow. That's really exciting.
Yeah.
So what was the impetus for you, and how long have you been working on this?
It's been a work in progress, myself and my other business partners. We've been going at it now for just shy of 3 years. We started stacking the logs the day after Christmas, and once the logs go up, it's a pretty quick process. And we still got some more stuff to get done. We got to get the outside finished, you know, before winter hits us. We've always been, my business partners and I have always been involved in the shooting industry, for myself personally, mostly because of hunting. And, we just wanted to provide a safe environment that could be, strong, emphasize the teaching and the trainings and proper gun technique, and give Juno, that side of Juno, a proper safe environment for them to come and fire the firearms.
It's interesting, I mean, because we do have an outdoor shooting range, but like you said, there's, you know, if unless you're going out there by yourself, there's really no person to...
We have a phenomenal facility outside, and I'm a big advocate of it. I use it all the time. But, you know, in the middle of the winter, it's hard to get, especially the missus, you know, it's hard to get her to go out and jump on the snow and use the blue porta potty. You know, she's very keen on indoor plumbing. And so for us to be able to go shooting in the winter, we always kind of had to get a hall pass. And we wanted to create an atmosphere that the whole family could come and participate in, enjoy.
And could you talk a little bit about your instructors and where they come from? And
yeah, so all of our certified range safety officers are all over 21 years of age. Right now, all of our employees are local employees who are somehow involved in the firearm industry, and then we provide the training and the certification through the NRA for the range safety officer program. And then once we provide the basic classes this fall, then we'll be looking for outside instructors to come on and do some more of the technical classes that the folks want to take.
Yeah. So for people who, you know, I have to say before I moved to Juno 10 years ago, I was kind of scared of guns. And now that I know safety-wise how to use them, for the most part, I feel a lot better. Do you find that you get a lot of newcomers, and how is that
working? We do, especially females. It's the fastest growing demographic right now in the shooting industry. They say 33% of all shooters now are females. And same, you know, I mean, yeah, firearms, you know, if not used properly, can be dangerous, just like any other tool or vehicle. And that's why I think, you know, Juno has a huge population of firearms, and I think it's very important that people respect and know how to use them properly so we don't have to have any tragedies.
Yeah, and so you're a mix of both the teaching, the facility, as well as there is retail.
There is retail, yeah, and that side of the business is always going to be growing with the 5-Eleven distributorship, the Sitka Gear distributorship, and you know we really want to focus on anything for the shooting industry. We're going to, for now, stay away from the fishing supplies. I think you know these. Some other local community stores that are doing a phenomenal job offering that niche.
Yeah, so we read online a little bit something about a zombie package.
It's a crazy. Everybody seems to be on this zombie fetish, and you know that or the apocalypse, and the zombie package. You know, with the popularity of zombies now on television and all. And we have a couple different zombie packages. We have a zombie package that's involving some of the firearms that you can go down and shoot. And then we also have a video simulation where folks can come in, and it's a 12-foot screen. It's real firearms, but you run them on CO2 and lasers. And so you can get a proficiency with that. And then one of the scenarios is a zombie apocalypse. So it's kind of like watching The Walking Dead, but you're participating in it. And yeah.
Wow. I bet that's a pretty popular
that's
seller.
That's a hoot. Yeah, that's quite fun. We're actually just waiting on the full version to come in, and that should be up and running by next week.
Wow, cool.
And we're open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 10 to 7, and then on Sundays, noon to 5.
And for people who don't know where you are, can you kind of give us a rundown?
Absolutely. We're at 1720 Crest Street. It's just across the street from the Glacier Fire Department, just down from the airport. So if you're leaving the airport, it's right on the frontage road. You'll drive right past it. It's the big log building across the street from Southeast Mine Supply.
Great. And for those people who are still like, well, what's available? What's your website?
Yeah, the website is JunoGuns.com, and then we also have a Facebook page, Alaska Shooting Tours. So the business is Juno Mercantile and Armory, and then Alaska Shooting Tours is our marketing with the tourism industry in the summertime for the shooting packages.
Oh, have you been getting a lot of tourists in the summer?
Yeah. And, you know, we've had a great response, you know, like any new business, we always want more business. And we've had a wonderful outcry from locals. We've got an amazing display of mounts that the locals have been, you know, generosity enough to let us display for them. And it's a pretty unique building.
You know, for some reason, I didn't even connect the dots that tourists would be into that, but of course they would.
Yeah, it's kind of especially with the fully automatics, they're very expensive to get into. There's a lot of regulations with ATF on them, and so it's one of those kind of bucket list items. It's because they are so expensive and the amount of regulation that there is with them, your average person isn't going to own one. So it just allows us to give people opportunity to explore and try that side of the shooting industry, you know, for once or twice and in a very safe, controlled environment.
Do you have, I'm kind of going back to the classes, my head is just, I have so many questions. Do you have women-specific, lady-specific classes?
We do, yeah. We have a femme fatale package, and we also want to start up this fall a female shooting league, and then also a class, you know, just provided for females, taught by females, for females, and that way try to ease maybe some of the stigmas that might be out there within the shooting industry.
And what about young people? Are there kids classes?
Absolutely. Yep, definitely. We definitely want to get the young people involved, especially with the safety of firearms, because so many of the kids are growing up with firearms in the home. And, you know, it's very important. I have children myself, and it's very important to me that, you know, kids from a young age, if they're going to be exposed to it, know what it is and know how to treat it and know how to respect it.
Yeah, it's a great service for our community. I wanted to ask one other random question here. I have been talking to a bunch of people about ammunition shortages, and Juneau being a place where that definitely is a case for some.
It is, and that's all the way across the nation, especially on your 22, your rimfire ammunition. It's still hard to get. We have 22 shells and we're able to get the competition grade ammo. But yeah, we're still, you know, wrapped in with the rest of the nation. We're definitely trying to get as much as we can. We've got a good supply of ammo in right now, and we could order just about anything that somebody would like us to get, or, you know, we'll ship and try to get it. 22, as far as the, you know, the inexpensive 22, that's just tough to get no matter where you go in the nation right now.
Why is that?
There's a couple of philosophies out there. I don't know if any of them holds water or not. One I've been told is the military is switched over to training with 22 because the platform that they use, the firearm that they use, is now being made in a 22 platform. Mm-hmm. So for them, the training is at least inexpensive because they're shooting a bullet that's cheaper.
Sure.
And there's no recoil with the 22 round, so it's a fun round to shoot. And then the other reason I've been told is we're going kind of through that hoarder's mentality recently, and folks are seeing it on the shelf, and then they're just buying everything they can, and then they're just leaving it stocked on their own shelves, and the supply just can't keep up with the demand.
Huh. Interesting.
It is. Nobody would have thunk it.
No. Yeah. Well, great. I would love to get that website one more time for people to check out.
JunoGuns.com.
Perfect. And Jason Tarver from Juno Mercantile and Armory, thank you so much for joining us on Juno Afternoon, and all the best with your new facility.
Thank you. My pleasure.
She's not a girl who misses much. Oh, yeah. She's well acquainted with the touch of the velvet hand, like a lizard on a pain. The man in the crowd with the multicolored mirrors on his hobnailed boots, lying with his eyes while his hands are busy working overtime. A soap impression of his wife, which he ate and donated to the National Trust. Mother Superior jumped the gun. Mother Superior jumped the gun. Mother Superior jumped the gun. Mother Superior jumped the gun.
And you're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. It's Thursday, July 31st, and I am very lucky to have in the studio with me Ariel from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, and also Shken George, a local artist and an educator in town. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good to be here.
Yeah, so you, Shken, you have a wonderful exhibit, and actually it's opening tomorrow.
Yes, it is.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about... it's octopus bags mainly, but I was wondering if you could talk to us about what the exhibit is.
Well, it has some of my octopus bags that I've been working on for the past couple years. They're more They're not necessarily traditional octopus bags because I kind of have my twist on them. So there's some woven bags, both Raven's Tail and Chilcat, and a couple felt bags that are beaded. But if you're familiar with octopus bags, they're going to look a little bit different than what you might expect. So.
What is a traditional octopus bag, and what do you feel like your spin on it is?
Well, when I think of an octopus bag and the historical octopus bags in photos that I've seen and the more traditional bags that people usually wear now, they're made of felt and they have beading on them. And they have what I've usually heard called as kelp designs or seaweed designs. And they're a floral pattern that we use here in Southeast Alaska on the bags. And I've kind of taken that idea and just tried to make designs that resemble the floral kelp designs, but tweak them a little bit. For example, on one bag, I wove waves that resemble the kelp designs over the top of a killer whale design. So, yeah, it's just different.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a couple of woven bags, Raven's Tail woven bags, and to put that kelp design on it, I cut those out of copper instead of beading them. So, yeah, I tried to keep it, but just tweak it a bit.
Oh, that's exciting. That's really great. So what are octopus bags for people who have no idea what they are? What are they, and what are they used for?
Well, I don't usually see people just wearing them to wear them. I usually see people wearing them at our kuiks or at our memorial parties. And I think in the past what I've heard most common is that the Nakanis wore it, which were the hired people to help at the parties. And but as you know, as time has gone on, more and more people are making them and using them, usually in more traditional settings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it's not just octopus bags that you have there. It's actually a variety of different art pieces. Can you talk about some of the other things?
I have a couple other things in there, kind of, I feel like, to highlight the octopus bags. I have three robes. Two of them are Raven's Tail robes, and one of them is a button blanket. And they're on mannequins, mainly to show how the octopus bag would have been used if a person were wearing it, as opposed to just hanging on the wall. And so those are in there. And I also did a couple, I have a couple necklaces with the copper kelp designs that are also on the bags, but I like them as jewelry as well. So those are there.
You work in a lot of mediums.
I do.
What's your favorite one?
For the past several years, I feel like I've been a weaver. Before I really got weaving a lot, I beaded quite a bit. So I go back to my beading a little bit, but right now I really enjoy the weaving.
And then instead of the beading on the bags, you're like, well, I'm just going to put some copper in there because I can.
Yeah, that's great.
And you mentioned that, well, I know you're also an educator. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that work.
Well, in the with my fascination with these bags and just all this, the making of the bags that I've been doing in my personal life, it's trickled over into school. So over the past couple of years, I've had students making octopus bags at school. And so I have five students who also are going to be showing their bags in my show, along with some kid activities that we've done with younger kids as well.
What kind of activities?
Oh, paper octopus bags and tracing, making kelp designs.
So this really is an opening for the whole family.
It is.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Ariel, do you want to talk a little bit about just the first Friday in general? Because
yeah,
at the Jack, it's always kind of a big party.
Yeah, it totally is. Tomorrow night, we're going to have the opening reception for Shken's show at 4:30 until 7. And that's sort of the general first Friday time around town. And we have lots of things going on around town this Friday, even though a lot of people are going to be out for the Haynes Fair. But we also have Food Truck Friday tomorrow night at the Jack. with live free music from 5:30 to 7. We'll have food vendors, art vendors, and then the shows around town. There's stuff at the Brewing Depot, Annie Kale's. We'll just run down the venues. But it's your regular First Friday map, and we have that available, too, on our website at jhc.org. So we've got the Brewing Depot, Annie Kale's, Canvas, the Canvas up on Seward Street, Silver Bow, Heritage, the Rookery, GCI is having a First Friday, Copa has a First Friday. I know I'm missing some, but we have the full list on our website, too.
That's great. And you can also check that out at kto.org.
That's right.
We have a really cool little app thing going on.
It is. It's really sweet.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So, Shiken, is this your first exhibit, or have people seen a lot of your work before? Or where else might they have caught it?
It really is. Several years ago, when I was doing more beading, when Raven's Journey was down on the wharf,
yeah.
I had some of my beading in there. And I think I was kind of in a group show opening one time, but it was really small. And other than that, this is my first show, and it's really the first time I've been able to have enough things completed all together at one time. It takes me a long time to finish my projects.
So. They're intricate too.
They are.
Yeah. And how long will the show be up?
Through the month of August. Yeah, so all month you can come, and I mean, the last weekend is when it's taken down. So
that's great. So, Shiken, you'll be at the opening tomorrow, I presume?
I will be.
And it's at 4:30?
Yes.
At the Juno Arts and Humanities Council at the Jack here downtown. And are there places, you said that some things are available for purchase, but only a few.
Yes, they are. Some things I've had to go back and collect and get on loan from, like, the Juno City Museum and some other people that have commissioned or purchased things from me in the past. So they were gracious enough to let me get them back for this show.
Is there a place where people who are interested in your work and your life as an artist, is there a place online that people could check out?
I do. I have a website. It's shgendutan.com.
Could you spell that for us?
S-H-G-E-N-D-O-O-T-A-N.
That's great. Well, best of luck with your opening tomorrow.
Thank you.
And if you don't get a chance to check it tomorrow, it'll be up all month at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And, yeah, best of luck. It's going to be great.
Thanks.
And here is Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 31st of July, 2014. It's the birthday of the author of the Harry Potter series, J.K. Rowling, born near Bristol, England in 1965. Studied French in college, then went to work for Amnesty International as a secretary. She was on a train coming home to London from a weekend looking at flats in Manchester, 1990, when she suddenly got the idea for Harry Potter. She said, "I was looking out of the window at some cows, I believe, and I just thought, boy doesn't know he's a wizard, goes off to wizard school." I have no idea where it came from. I think the idea was floating along the train and looking for someone, and my mind was vacant enough, so it decided to zoom in there. She found a publisher 6 years later who paid her an advance of £1,500. And in 5 years' time, J.K. Rowling went from being on public assistance to being a multimillionaire. It's the birthday of Kim Adonizio, the poet and novelist, born Washington, D.C., 1954. Most recent book of poetry, Lucifer at the Starlight, came out a couple years ago. Kim Adonizio, who said, "What I've learned is simple. If you nurture it, it will expand, and it will nurture you in return." It was on this date, 1703, the novelist Daniel Defoe was put in the pillories in London for sedition. He'd published a little satiric pamphlet advocating that the Church of England deal with nonconformists or dissenters simply by killing them. The church didn't see it as a joke. They found him. He was tried, found guilty, imprisoned, and sentenced to stand 3 times in the pillory, where people would likely throw rotten eggs at him. But his satire was popular, and the crowd drank to his health, and they pelted him with flowers. And it's the birthday of the chemist and writer Primo Levi, born in Turin, Italy, 1919. He was in northern Italy hoping to join the resistance against the Nazis. When he was captured, he was sent to Auschwitz, where he worked as slave labor in a rubber factory. He wrote 2 memoirs about his wartime experiences, If This Is a Man and The Truce, and also novels and stories and poems. Primo Levi died in 1987 after he fell or jumped from his 3rd-floor balcony in Turin. The coroner ruled his death a suicide, and he had been suffering from depression, but some of his friends argued that he'd complained of dizziness a few days before, and that as a chemist he certainly would have chosen a more foolproof method of committing suicide, with less risk of paralysis. Here's a poem for today by Leo Dangle, entitled In Memoriam. In the early afternoon, my mother was doing the dishes. I climbed onto the kitchen table, I suppose to play, and fell asleep there. I was drowsy and awake, though, as she lifted me up, carried me on her arms into the living room, and placed me on the davenport. But I pretended to be asleep the whole time, enjoying the luxury. I was too big for such a privilege, and just old enough to form my only memory of her carrying me. She's still moving me to a softer place. In Memoriam by Leo Dangle, from his collection Saving Single Trees, published by WSC Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And that was Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac. You're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. It's Thursday, July 31st. It's about 3:32. In the studio with me right now, I have Lori Weed from Daughters of the New Moon. Welcome to the studio.
Why, thank you.
So, Daughters of the New Moon, can you, for people who don't know, can you fill us in?
Sure. Daughters of the New Moon is a Middle Eastern dance troupe here in Juno. We've been together, various members anyway, have been together from 1983, so we're celebrating 31 years.
When you said that earlier, I was like, 31 years? I had no idea.
Yeah, and we've been teaching classes and doing performances, both, free public performances when we had Friday evening in the park, and local performances for, birthday parties and farewell parties and office parties and all those grand and fun things.
That's great. Usually, yeah, because you've done a lot of the concerts in the park before, yeah. And seen, at folk festival and all sorts of places.
Yeah, used to do Alaska State Fair, and then, we're all around town. We did the bridal fair here recently. We were at Earth Day at the Glacier. Last couple of years they've been doing those, and those are always good fun.
And so how does it work? Do you all rehearse once a week? You get together as a group? Or?
We do. We get together as a group, and it's kind of a rotating membership depending on the time of year. And we usually meet on Wednesdays, and we rehearse choreographies and just practice technique. And we pull new members usually from classes that we teach or dancers who move to town and reach out. And we're more than happy to integrate people who want to continue progressing and dancing and having fun. And yeah,
that's great. So for people, I mean, some of it is, what people, and I air quote it, but belly dancing, essentially, right?
Essentially, yes. I mean, that's usually what people know it as. And, you know, we try to, it's a little bit of a misnomer. You know, it was propagated back in the early 1900s where, you know, bellies were kind of risque. So Middle Eastern dance or Rakshaki or Oriental dance are all, I don't want to say like ethnic terms, but, you know, more acceptable in the dance circles. But, you know, when you're talking to the general public, it's like, oh, yeah, we do belly dance. It's like, oh, okay, that's what you do.
Right. People get it then.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So how many members in your group?
I think we have about 12 at the moment, give or take a couple. So it's, you know, it's up there, but like I said, it's summertime.
Mm-hmm.
So we probably have about six or eight that are regularly showing up. We're on a little bit of a break right now. We usually take a little time off before we get ramped up. Middle of August, we ramp up for our fall workshop series and show. And so we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah, that's actually a great segue. So you have workshops coming up, mm-hmm. and then you do a public performance.
Right. So we are going to host Kareem Nagy this year. He's actually our first gentleman instructor that we've had, so we're kind of excited to present that as something different for Juno. And he's very much a musician dancer, so hopefully this will appeal to the people who want to know more about, you know, the drumming or just rhythms or basic musical construction of Middle Eastern music and dance. So we're very excited. We planned him over 2 years in advance because he is a really popular, really fun instructor. And, we're going to start September 25th, which is a Thursday. We'll have a workshop on rhythms, speaking and clapping and dancing too. And we'll have the Friday workshop show. We're going to have it at the Moose Lodge this year. And so there will be food and drink available. We're going to have performances by daughters and other local dancers and some out-of-town dancers who are coming in for the workshop. So we'll get a couple different flavors. I think we have one lady who's going to do Persian fusion. And hopefully Noodle Adum, I believe, is planning on attending. And they're one of the local drummer-dancer groups here in town also. And then we'll have two workshops Saturday, the 27th, and two workshops Sunday, the 28th. We're going to do Debki, which is kind of an Arabic line dance. You do it like linked hand and in a circle, and it's very much a very fun social dance with stepping and stomping and jumping to your own abilities. You know, everybody does it, grandparents, uncles, aunts, little kids. And, you know, you have a leader who gets really excited, and then everybody kind of follows along. We're looking forward to taking that workshop and hopefully having just people who have never danced before. That would be a great workshop just to kind of come, because it has that social aspect where you don't have to have, you know, have formal dance training for that one.
Mm-hmm.
We have other workshops where, let's see, what else are we teaching? The Maqam and Taqseem, which is very much going to be kind of a, not classic, but music-based. Learning what Maqam is, the kind of like the mood of the music, whether it's a peppy, happy, or it's kind of sad or soulful, learning the difference between that and dancing to it. We have one of our workshops on Sunday is going to be for dancers or drummers, learning how to interact together. So that'll be kind of, I think, hopefully really fun. And then we'll follow up. The last workshop will be on finger cymbals. So from newbies to advanced, everybody will get, you know, new techniques to learn from that one.
So forgive my naivete, but
sure.
is he, well, when we say belly dancing, is he a traditional belly dance instructor? How does that work?
Well, from his bio, he moved to the U.S. I think in his teens, and he, you know, he brings kind of that ethnic culture and, but with, you know, been American culturized. He does a lot of blended work. He does, not as you would think, I think, a belly dance performance. He does mostly folkloric when he dances. And he does a lot of, musical performance with a lot of humor in them. You can look him up on YouTube. And, I mean, just his expression and the way he plays is really dramatic. You know, he can leap about while playing the drum. I mean,
that's great.
Great fun.
So there's that happening September. Can you give us the dates one more time?
Sure. It's September 25th through 28th. So that's the last weekend, full weekend of September. Starts on Thursday. Friday's the show. Saturday and Sunday are more workshops. So it'll be good fun.
Great. So what about, you also have some ongoing classes starting really soon.
Really soon. So if you are interested in taking the classes, but maybe want a little bit of belly dance instruction under your belt before you get there, we do have a class starting on Monday, 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Sorry, I got that wrong on the flyers. But that starts 7 weeks, August 4th through September 15th. And that's in the Lemon Creek area. It's $85, includes sales tax.
So that's you come just once every Monday?
Once a Monday.
So what is that environment like? Like, let's say you're a person like me and you're like, I am not going to do belly dancing.
How could you convert
the person like me?
You should absolutely come. I mean, it's about if you can walk, you can come to the class and we will teach you everything else.
Because you got to shake things, like hips have got to be moving.
We teach you how to loosen up a little bit, and you know, by repetition, it naturally kind of wiggles loose. you know, but if you can step, and we'll work on stepping to the beat, and then you know, moving the hips to the beat, and breaking it down, and you know, mostly a lot of women come just because it is kind of a really kind of uplifting way to kind of feel good about whatever body you've ended up with after, you know, having kids or, you know, maybe sitting on the couch and the computer a little too long. You know, you just wear clothes that you're comfortable in that you would, you know, yoga pants and a t-shirt, you know, you don't make you bare your belly. that classic costume is actually no bared belly. So.
See, you already have me a little bit more on board. You said that, I'm like, oh, yoga pants I can do.
Yoga pants, yeah, very comfortable. So, we very much try not to take us extremely seriously. We're not, you don't want to disparage ballet dancers, you know, but we're not focused on the bar, you know, with everything has to be really precise. Well, you get there if you want to, but it's very much work at your own comfort pace and level. You know, we always say, you know, if it hurts, don't do it. And if you don't feel comfortable with it, you know, just be moving in the back and we'll work on it.
And is it something that's available for all ages? So
pretty much. We can teach specific kids classes, or if you have like a kid's birthday party that you want like a single person to go and instruct in your house for the party, we can do that. We usually try to limit age limits to about 12 and up, just because learning and attention span can be a little bit more of a challenge for the other groups if there's younger members in there. So, but everybody from 12 and up are more than welcome. And if you have a very well-behaved, you know, like 10-year-old or so, and they're coming with a parent in particular, more than happy to have them.
So when in the classes, do you also learn a lot about where the dance comes from and the history of the dance and things like that?
Well, we try not to overwhelm people who are just there to have fun. We do throw some in and, you know, and I'll talk a little bit about the, you know, maybe what rhythm is playing, or that this is a really classical piece for that we're doing our warm up to, or like this is where we've learned this movement from, and this is kind of the traditional style over here, and this is a little bit more tribal, American tribal version, or, you know, you'll do this in Turkish, but don't do this in Egyptian style. Because,
yeah.
You know, you never know who your audience is going to be, and they might not like too many uplifts instead of if they're used to downs. But you know what? If you're dancing for the general public here in town, they just love to see it. So it's...
Yeah. It's true. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Do you all have a website or a Facebook page or something where people can get more information or do sign-ups or that kind of thing?
We do. We have both. We have Facebook. You can just look us up, Daughters of the New Moon. And our webpage is just daughtersofthenewmoon.com.
Yeah, so keeping it simple.
Keeping it simple.
People like me love it. Well, Lori, thank you so much for coming on to talk about all the upcoming classes that are offered for Daughters of the New Moon.
Thank you.
And, yeah, we'll direct people to your Facebook and website.
Yep. Hope to see you all.
Because I'm high.
And that's the Polyphonic Spree with It's the Sun, in homage to the sun that popped out today. This is Shona Strausser. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, July 31st. And in the studio with me, I'm very lucky, it's Arts Up. We have Sandy Fortier and Miranda, both from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming. So what's going on in our fine community in this upcoming week?
Well, we are very lucky that we have all this sun and we have all these arts activities to pair up with it, because a lot of them are out of, or you can do outdoors, and or you can go outside and then come in for just a little bit and get your arts fix.
Yes.
Tomorrow, of course, is First Friday, and so you can walk around at downtown and hit up all the galleries. And at the Jack, we have Food Truck Friday. We have an opening there, too, which you heard about earlier. And then Food Truck Friday with food trucks outside and live music inside. So I want Miranda to tell you about the artists that are performing tomorrow.
So inside in the main hall, we have Heartstrings. That's Lisa Miles, and they play folk music. And then we have Hawaiian Hula Dancing with Leah Momi and her troupe, Halau Hula. And J.D. Morgan, he's a singer-songwriter, so I think it'll just be him with his guitar, and that's in the main hall.
Awesome.
Ooh, fun.
I love that.
We can get some food and sit outside. We'll probably pipe the music out, though.
So. Yeah,
that's
we
good
will.
If it's nice. Tonight, I forgot about tonight. Tonight, Into the Woods, Perseverance Theater has an Into the Woods performance.
That's right. The kiddos are doing Into the Woods, so it's part of the STAR program. It's awesome. Sold out on Friday night, so get there early.
Oh.
160 people showing up to see some kids' theater. I love it.
That's awesome.
It's really good.
Totally cool.
Yeah. Tomorrow, too, right? My America, My Story is tomorrow. That's the one you're talking about?
That's right. Out. Another one, My America, My Story, tomorrow night.
Okay. And Perseverance Theater also has their Summerfest going through August 6th at the Jack. A few shows a day, so it rotates, so you can see all three shows. Check out Perseverance Theater and get in on all this before the summer is over, pretty much in the next week.
It closes next week?
Yeah.
Yeah, and all the 2 p.m. shows are pay-as-you-can for locals, so that's a really good deal.
Ooh, good tip. Good tip. Okay, let's see. Did we cover Friday?
Yeah, Friday's covered. So we got Food Truck Friday. We've got the Arts First Friday all over town. You can go to the usual suspects, really, the Canvas, Annie Kales, all the really cool places downtown. And you can pick up a map at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. And then also, KTOO does this really cool app. We have a little app for your iPhone that has everything on it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Sounds
check
awesome.
It out and plan out your walk. Okay, so then we talked a little bit about Saturday. Perseverance has their show, Into the Woods, and they have their shows at the Jack. And then Sunday, I always like to mention the weekly ukulele jam at TK McGuire's on Sundays, every Sunday. So,
you know, I talked to a ukulele jammer. I'm going to say ukulele. Yeah, well, I don't know. They always correct me.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm like, it has a Y on it, right? But I talked to a jammer, and he said it's really freeform, open, fun. So you don't have to be, you know, an ukulele proficient person. You could just show up and play.
Sounds good. And then Sunday night,
we have Sandy Fortier, who is our interim executive director right now. And it's her very own duet called Flutatious Duet. And they're playing movie tunes. Is that right?
Yes. So we're going to play some flute duets. And you have to see if you can recognize what movie it's from, because it'll be kind of interesting with two flutes. But I think I can tell.
Can you hum one for us? Maybe we could guess. You're like, no.
Yeah, I think she can.
Well, you can guess from my beautiful voice, but it's going to be even different with the flute.
Good, nice. Nice work. I like that.
That's from 6:45 to 7:45.
Oh, nice. Out at the airport.
At the airport, yeah.
So what did you do? Did you rearrange a bunch of stuff?
There's a book. It's a whole movie duets book.
For flutes?
Yeah.
I love that.
I know.
So do you. You love it more.
I know. You can tell. And then we're going to play some blues. So there's some things that you just don't usually hear flutes playing. So it'll be fun.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And that's free. So you just have to go and get out to the airport.
Yeah. I mean, you could just sit around in the baggage claim area, which I love.
Yeah. There's great benches. You can sit. There's great sunshine, even through the big windows. I'm going to go.
Yay.
Cool.
And my baby will be there dancing. So
it's pretty adorable.
Okay. What else happening this week?
We've got Monday. The Canvas has some classes going on, wheel throwing and whatnot. So you should check out the Canvas. They have something it looks like about every day. So, but wheel throwing always appeals to me. I always wanted to learn that. And then Intro to Belly Dance on Monday nights. That would be fun. Daughters of the New Moon. And the Juno Lyric Opera is doing their Midsummer Vocal Festival, and it might be too late to join up to sing. You might call them and see, but they practice every night, and then they have a concert next on the 9th that you can go to. You don't have to be singing in that. Just buy some tickets and go to that.
Yeah, and it's all Broadway tunes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan.
Mm-hmm. So that one's fun. What else do we have? So we're on Tuesday, we've got, of course, Perseverance shows going on. Going on to Wednesday. Discovery Southeast has some nice things, some camps. I don't know if they're full, but you should check that out. The Valley Library on Wednesday has Write for Your Life, 10 to 11 a.m., and I think people share stories that they have in journals and or have found. Let's see. What else? Oh, it's Old Time String Band Jam at the Alaskan, 7 to 9 on Wednesdays. It seems like maybe anybody could join that one up. Mm-hmm. I haven't been to that.
Yeah, I think it's every week.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know, maybe even if you're a singer, check that one out. The Zach Gordon Youth Center has summer camps going on. Check them out and see if they're full or not. Good thing it's going to be kind of sunny out. I'm like, seeing what else is going on.
I love it. Well, now, because you're in the area, what is the Jack got coming up for their season, next season? What kind of things do we have going on? Or maybe just a hit.
We have quite a lot of good shows. We have the United Kingdom Ukulele Orchestra.
Oh, my God.
Yep, so that should be pretty popular. There will be 8 people from England all playing ukulele on the stage at JDHS, and that's in October, so that's coming up pretty shortly. We have Kealoha. He's a slam poet. He's Hawaii's first poet laureate, and he's played at the White House. He's pretty famous. Have you heard of him?
Oh, he's awesome.
Yeah?
He blows me away.
Yeah, I've heard he's really inspirational.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exciting. That's in October. That's in November. And I think that's all I can remember off
Second
the top
City
of my
Players
head.
Are coming.
Oh, yeah.
Big time.
That's
Gordon Werlbar.
I'm sorry, who did you say? The Second City Players?
Mm-hmm.
Who's that?
The Second City, they're like a pre-Saturday Night Live show, right? Like,
yeah, improv.
Yeah, that's improv, comedy. That's in May.
Yeah, yeah, so we got it all spread out.
Yeah.
And also, I should remind you that Food Truck Fridays go until August 15th. So you have tomorrow, next week, and the next week, three of them left. And the last one will have a beer garden at it, the 15th.
Score.
Yeah.
We like beer gardens.
Yeah.
With our art, of course.
Of course.
Well, cool. And where's the place that you can get all this wonderful arts information?
Yeah, we have a community calendar. You can go to jahc.org, and you can check out any of our shows, but also everything going on in the community, and K2 maintains a calendar, community calendar, too.
That's right, shared with ktoo.org. You can definitely check both of those out. Miranda, Sandy, always a pleasure. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here is Bird Note for Thursday, July 31st.
This is Bird Note. At the crack of the bat, a blue jay barely flies toward first base. The Blue Jay glides around first, heading for second base. Deep in left field near the foul pole, an Oriole pounces on the ball. He wings the ball towards second, where a fellow Oriole snares it on a hop, just as the swift Blue Jay slides toward the base in a cloud of red dust. Meanwhile, somewhere in the heartland, nine cardinals are routing a like number of carnivorous mammals. Cubs or tigers. Or perhaps a school of prodigious fish. Marlins or rays. In July, baseball and the boys of summer reign supreme in the sports headlines. Brightly colored birds adorn the caps of the Toronto Blue Jays. The Baltimore Orioles. And the St. Louis Cardinals. For Bird Notes, I'm Rocky Riz.
This station receives support from Canyon Hydro, providing maintenance, inspection, and repair services to remote hydro producers with fly-in service available. Information about these services can be found at canyonhydro.com.
Perseverance Theater Summerfest now playing through August 6th only, and pay-as-you-can performances on all matinees are also now available. It's a perfect chance to bring your visiting friends and family and discover, explore, and laugh. Experience the stunning visuals of the Blue Bear, the powerful story and history of Alaska Native warfare, and Dave Hunsaker's Warriors. And giggle the night away at the biggest Broadway comedy in years, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike, now playing Summerfest. Visit ptalaska.org or call 463-TIXS.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon this Thursday, July 31st. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Thanks so much and have a great day.
At some point, and it's not very far away, if it